Please join me in welcoming Jimmy D from Malibu as our main speaker.
Hey everybody, I'm Jimmy. I am an alcoholic. Wow, it's an honor and a privilege to be here at the world famous Arroyo Grande monthly speaker meeting. Thank you, Lee, for asking me. Yeah, fantastic. Nikki did a great job. So good she left, I guess. Yeah. Oh, there she is. Fantastic. I know Los Osos. I think that's up to 154. You pass Santa Barbara on the way, Los Osos. Is that right? I don't know. Hey, no crosstalk. Two hours and 55 minutes. I live at Zuma Beach, if anybody knows where that is. It's the far other end of Malibu. Malibu's 27 miles of coastline. I'm pretty much at the far other end of the nightmare that happened a few weeks ago down there, closer to LA. I'm away from LA, so thrilled to be alive and safe. And 2 hours and 55 minutes getting here. And I was super early. I pulled into the parking lot. Because I scanned what Lee sent me. I just looked at it. Okay, St. John's Church. Okay, 1500 West Branch. Okay, fantastic. And I pull in. It's like a True Value Hardware. I'm thinking, okay, must be around the back. I'm driving around for 10 or 15 minutes in circles. And then, because, you know, I'm sort of dyslexic or something, it was the address of the restaurant. Same paragraph, I mixed it up. You know, life is hard, and it's really hard when you read like a third grader. Anyway, 2 hours, 55 minutes, worth every minute. A week ago, Thursday, I drove 3 hours and 35 minutes on a Thursday. I don't know if you folks know this. Thursday is the new Friday in Los Angeles. Thursday traffic is unbelievable. 3 hours and 35 minutes from Zuma Beach to Aliso Viejo, California, to speak at some AA meeting. I tell you that right off the bat to let everyone in this room know that I am willing to go to any length to listen to myself uninterrupted for 45 minutes. This is my favorite part of any meeting, you know, when I get a chance. My home group's a one-hour discussion meeting. I sit there 55 minutes, I have no idea what anybody's saying. I'm just waiting for my 5 minutes. I always get something out of it. So yeah, you know, the whole no crosstalk thing's my favorite. I start talking, you know, nowhere else does anybody listen. You know, I start talking at home, the dog leaves the room. But in AA, everybody says, you know, I love it. So yeah, thank you to my beautiful wife. We're married 25 years this year, 25 years. Got two kids, two mongrel kids that grew up in a sober, drug-free home. How do you put a price tag on that? I owe AA, I owe you. Rooms like this and people like you, because I don't have what it takes. Anyway, first thing I should tell everyone in the room, number one, I didn't always look like a cop. This was this was once a very punk rock haircut when I got it, 1979. My peers, all the older dudes, were running around with mullets, but I had a punk rock, you know, short, high and flat on the top, but I morphed, I got old. By the time I was 30, started looking like a cop everywhere I went, and man, that's a heavy cross to bear. And now I'm 65 years old, and people tell me I look like a military guy. I look like I've been in the military. I was 2 weeks ago. I'm going through TSA. The guy says to me, "What are you, retired military?" I had to tell him the truth. I said, "Nah, man, I never been in the military. I did a short tour in the Salvation Army, but I don't get any." No credit, no stolen valor from me. And yeah, I love AA, I owe AA. I don't have what it takes to have lived the life I've lived. And because as you can tell, I'm not smart. And I got sent to AA in December of 1975, coming up on 50 years ago. By the state of Pennsylvania juvenile court systems. The judge sent me to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was the first of about six kids in my county that were in trouble. And I'm from a broken alcoholic home, and my drinking was back east. Anybody else drink in the cold? Anybody else from Midwest or back East, couple of yous, all right. Yeah, and my thing was, listen, I started early when I, you know, because I'm, unlike a lot of your speaker types, I'm not an athlete. You know, I'm tall, but I can't jump. I'm not an academic, as you can tell. My drinking didn't increase in college, and I didn't go to college. And, you know, I can't fix nothing. I'm not handy. I grew up in a broken home. There was no father around, and, you know, I can't fix. I showed no promise in anything but, like, burglary. I mean, I had nothing going for me at all. And but I discovered alcohol when I was a kid, and I learned right away I'm going to need money for this. I started junior high school, and the thing was, I go up to school, and I live right across the street from the school, sort of, and across the back. I'd go up to school. School starts 8:20. I'm there at 7:30, standing in front of the entrance to the cafeteria where kids have money. They're coming in to get breakfast or whatever, and I started junior high. Hey, man, got a nickel, got a dime, got a quarter, and I bum a couple dollars, $2.50. By 8:15, I'm leaving campus, sometimes with somebody else, sometimes with a girl, you know, kids, friends. And older people, I'd go sit behind the liquor store, and I'd see the same adults coming all the time, same adults going in, hey, mister, can you get us a run? I'd be pointing, there's nobody there. Hey, yeah, we're having a party. I'd give a guy $2 and say, keep the change, because back then, for $1.80, I could get a bottle of Banana Red, MD-2020. You guys know what that is? Anybody heard of that up in Arroyo Grande? Okay. If you haven't heard of MD-2020, it's actually a Schedule I hallucinogen that somehow this stuff made it to the wine section of liquor stores. Wine had never seen a grape, and it was like rocket fuel, honest to God. MD-2020. I was on the MD-2020 diet. Lose 3 days in 1 week. And man, I've been arrested in the snow with no shirt on, 10 o'clock in the morning. And I don't know if you can tell, but I'm not just an alcoholic. I'm a glue sniffer and a PCP smoker. When I got to AA, I had that PCP glare. You know, where people weren't exactly sure who I was talking to. And I got in trouble fast. And sometimes I have to take it easy. I'd give a guy... Can't drink the MD-2020. Have to give a guy $2.25, keep the change. $2.10, get a six-pack of 16-ounce Colt 45. That doesn't make me a big drinker, but everything I drank had a number. Bacardi 151, Old English 800. That's how I learned math. And that doesn't make me a big drinker. I've sat in these AA meetings a long time. I hear guys, you know, say, I drank 5 gallons of whiskey every day for 40 years. And I say, cool. But, you know, when you're 14 years old, 15, it's 10 o'clock in the morning, you've been sniffing glue and, you know, smoking weed, and a six-pack of 16-ounce Colt 45 is enough to get you in trouble. I got, you know, I've been arrested 11 times and picked up by the cops probably 30 times. And I'm not a real criminal. I wasn't a real criminal. I don't want to point you out like some of you guys here. I'm not going to say I was like that, but, you know, kid stuff. Possession and consumption of alcohol by a minor, resisting arrest every time, disorderly conduct, urinating in public, right? All the classy things. One of those urinating in public, I didn't even bother to get my fly down. You know, I'm just, come on, officer, I'm wasted here. You know, life is, there's seconds and inches, man. Hey, welcome to the guys in the VIP room in the back there. Welcome, gentlemen. Seconds and inches, man. Seconds and inches. How a lot of us are here, a lot of us are alive. My life could have been so different. You know, a lot of time, you know, I'm lucky I never had to register as a sex offender, because cops, they don't want to get you for urinating in public. The cops always want to get you for indecent exposure. Luckily, I've got insufficient evidence. So, I'm grateful for the little things, so to speak. Seconds and inches, you get that, Lee? Okay. Good night. Is that enough? Is that enough? They're throwing me out of here. I can feel the hook coming. They're clapping. They wish I was in it. Okay. So, yeah, I got in trouble. My real thing was keg parties. I'm a keg party guy. A lot of heads nodding. Most people in most AA meetings know all about the keg parties because, number one, you know, you'd hear about it, somebody's house, so-and-so's house, Saturday night, 8 o'clock. Man, I'd be there at 6:15 with a pitcher, ready to go, get my drink on. I'm the first one at the keg, and I don't move until they move me. I know all the tricks. I'm holding that cup there. I keep putting it in. You know, there's 50 people in line, and I've had 10. I'm just whipping them down. And, you know, eventually, the bigger, older guys, I'm 15, 16 years old, the bigger, older guys would notice, dude, there's 50 people in line. You've had 10 drinks. Out, move. And I'd have to resort to drink stealing. I'm a drink stealer at parties. Anybody, any other drink stealers? Such a nice crowd. Probably no drink stealers here. Hey, believe it or not, some people drink like this. And they set it down. Can you imagine at a party? With a ninja like me, I know all the tricks. Open your throat. Hey, look who it is. Yeah. But I can't see, man. I can't see. I'm a blind drunk. There's cans and cups and bottles everywhere. I'm grabbing every third, fourth one. You know, if I'm up, I'm still up. I'm not drunk. I'm up. But I can't see. And, man, every third, fourth one, there's a risk in drink stealing. Some of you guys know. Cigarette butts. They came out with them brown bottles. It's the risk you had to take. The real risk, some of you guys know this too, the real risk in drink stealing is that people hate drink stealers. People hate them. I've been caught. It brings out a viciousness in humanity like I've never seen. You get caught stealing somebody's drink. I've been beat up bad by little dudes and chicks. And I'm that guy. I'm that guy at the party, and it didn't go well. And typical night, I'm in the freezing Pennsylvania winter. I'm at a party. Next thing you know, I'm at another party. I have no idea where this party is, but I'm at a different party. I'm outside. I'm bleeding, and they're not letting me in. They're not letting me in. What? I was partying. And I'd stumble home. I'd have to stumble. Stumbling home, find my way home, stumbling in the freezing cold Pennsylvania winter. I wish I could tell you that this only happened once, but this is the kind of typical night for a 15-year-old teenage alcoholic, immature, insecure, overly emotional, messed up. Something was wrong. Had alcoholism bad. And get home to my mom's house. I bounced between my mom and her sister's house and my aunt's house, and I stumble into my mom's house. Oh, I can't get in. The door's locked. That's right. I snuck out. Can't get in. 4, 5, 6 a.m., no idea. It's freezing. I go sleep in my mom's car. I come to in the morning. My whole crotch, from my navel to my knees, all the skin through the inner thighs, all the skin was raw, gone. The skin was ripped off. It was like a giant rash. It was so painful, and I'm looking down. I'm thinking, who was I with, a stray dog? I mean, what is going on here? And then I'd see my pants, and I'd smell it all come back. Oh, I must have walked home with frozen piss pants. And, yeah, that quiets the crowd. Doesn't it, Lou? Chicks don't dig that, man. When you're that guy, and I've had to hear it. I've had to hear, I'm that guy at the party, my neighbors, my peers, other people, normal parties, they told me, Jimmy, everybody saw you. You were trying to talk to girls. Your pants were pissed. And I'm glad you say, yeah, that's fun. That's funny. I know. It's It's funny now, but when you're 15, 16, you're not good at sports, you're a poor sport. No, I wasn't bad. I was a poor sport. I was immature, insecure, overly emotional, messed up, stole from my neighbors. It was a paper boy that stole from houses. And I know what it's like when people look down on you. People look at you with disgust. I know what it feels like to lose friends because of my behavior. And, you know, pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization ran through my DNA. It was bad news. And I went, that's, you know, that crossed that, what is it Clancy used to call it? You know, the perception. My perception changed from a few years of partying. This is the most fun I've ever had, something I'm good at. Within a few short years, not enjoying who I was, being ashamed. If I had any courage, I'd have ended my life. I know what it feels like. Bad stuff happened in my little life. Bad stuff. I'll tell you a quick story. First, I'll tell you that I was living in a boys' home at age 16. I'm living in a boys' home. December of 1975, I got sent to. I was living in a place called the Coots Home for Wayward Boys, Bridge House. And I was in there with developmentally challenged kids and orphans and incest survivors and me, a big dumb loser who wouldn't listen to his mom, wouldn't go to school. I was a truant, and because I couldn't face who I was. And I'm living in a boys' home, and the judge sent me to 16 meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous in December of 1975. And so I had to go to 16 meetings in the first 8 weeks I was there. And I'd already been sent to the Scared Straight program. I know what I've been screamed at. I was shocked when I saw, that was a TV show a few years, 10 years, 20 years later, whatever it was. I was blowing my mind. I thought it was just one little Delaware County medium security correctional facility where I was sent, and had guys screaming at me. And your speaker tonight does not respond well to tough love. Tough love does not work for me. And I know it, you know, it's a tool, people use it. But it didn't work. It never inspired me to want to clean up my life to have guys screaming at me and telling me what, you know, what's going to happen. And you know, that didn't work. But I noticed the difference in AA the first time AA came into that home. They came the first night they came in. And I'll tell you the difference. These old people were kind to me. They were kind to me. Nobody ever said I was too young. They didn't call me a drug addict. They welcomed me. They gave me rides. The guy said to me, Jimmy, I'm going to pick you up tomorrow. It was a first encounter with AA that I had to go. He said, Jimmy, I'm going to pick you up tomorrow night right in front of this house. Right in front of this house at 7:30 tomorrow night. I'm going to take you down to the AA meeting at 8 o'clock on Market Street, the 12 and 12 Club. And he said, Jimmy, when an AA guy tells you he's going to be there at 7:30, he's there at 7:30. And you know, through my brain damage, I sort of understood that there was something solid going on with these guys. They were different. These kind guys gave me rides. They gave me cigarettes, 2-3 cigarettes for the road. Back, cigarettes were 35 cents a pack then. Now at 8, 10, 12 bucks, I don't think the new guys are getting any cigarettes, are they? Anyway. Man, they bought me pie after the meeting, take me out, talking AA. And you know what? Nobody can tell me different. That's almost 50 years ago. Kindness is the language of Alcoholics Anonymous. Period. That's it. That's what's going on here. I felt it when I walked into this room tonight late. People are happy to be here. This is an important hour in our lives. It's an important hour in our month here in South County. Is it South San Luis Obispo County? Is that what it is? All right. I was thinking we were way north Santa Barbara County, but all right, South County. I'm in. But it's an important hour. How do you put a price tag on this hour? And you know, this hour, it's once a month. I know you folks are reading the book all month and going to step meetings and reading the book and step studies and all that stuff. Fantastic. But on Saturday night, the once a month, we're going to have fun. We're going to laugh. You see, if it was up to me, every meeting would be a pep rally, because most of us in this room haven't suffered from the hideousness of ugly active alcoholism for a matter of months, years, or even decades, some of us. And, you know, separated a distance between the ugliness of cops and court cases, financial terror, unspeakable loneliness, domestic violence, traumatized children. That's what alcoholism is. It's not a cold beer at the beach. You know, a cold beer at the beach is fun for people. But if you got alcoholism, it's about all that ugliness I just mentioned. And you know what? We're not suffering from that. Good night. I'm used to that. You know, people go. Doesn't bother me. I'll be the last one in here still talking. Drive home feeling fantastic. Yeah, that's what's going on in AA. It's like a pep rally because I got a lot to cheer about. I haven't lived that ugliness because of rooms like this and people like you. Let me tell you what these old guys said to me when I was new in AA. They said, Jimmy, you are lucky to know about AA at your age. You are lucky. Man, I wish I'd have known about AA. These old guys said things like, I was qualified for this program when I was 15 years old, blackout drinking. My whole life would have been different had I known about AA. These old guys said, they said, Jimmy, you stick around this AA. And it wasn't just the guys, the girls would say it before the meeting, during the meeting, after the meeting. They said, you stick around this AA, you can't imagine the life you'd have. You can't imagine the kind of life you have, you stick around AA. And I remember exactly what I felt and what I thought when these old guys said that to me. First of all, they were probably in their 30s or 40s. I thought, come on, mister. You don't even know me. You can't say that because you don't know me. I'm a loser. I'm a failure. I had the opposite of the Midas touch, and I knew it. Everything I touched turned to crap. Bad stuff happened in my little life, in my little home life, in my little neighborhood. My best friend, I'm 15, he's 16. He's a good kid, he's a drinker. He's not a druggie like me, he's a drinker like everybody. I turned him onto that PCP and he went and walked in front of the Metro liner. Dead, 16 years old. I grew up in a town where the warring motorcycle gangs, the Warlocks versus the Pagans, and they were cooking up crank and PCP in the 70s. It wiped out half my town. Like I told you, I'm lucky to be alive. That judge saved my life. And the old AA guys were kind to me. And you know, now I know when an old AA guy says, stick around here, you can't imagine what's on offer. Now I listen up. Because it's like they were looking in a crystal ball. They were looking in a crystal ball. They knew the future for a big dumb loser like me. None of my little neighborhood friends that got sent to AA subsequent to me, after me, and I went to meetings with some of them, I partied with some of these guys. None of those dudes lived to be 30 years old. My friends died of heroin overdoses. My next door neighbor died. Two guys from my town, the same judge sent them. Crash cars on the same street within a year of each other, going, you know, 100 miles an hour on a 30 mile an hour zone. My friends missed the boat. My sobriety date is May 10, 1977. I was 17 years old, and I've been around the world. I've been around the world as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I got more friends than I can keep in touch with. And that's not a brag. That's about what's on offer in Alcoholics Anonymous. I got more support and more love than anybody could ever take advantage of. And it's on offer for anybody that walks in the doors of AA. This is the best show in town. I wouldn't give up my seat, just like our first speaker talked about. I wouldn't give up my seat in AA for anyone or anything, because I don't have what it takes to have lived this life. I got power from being a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I got an 80-something year old plan for living that works. I'm not self-made. There's nothing about me that's self-made. Every good thing I got in this life is because I got sent to AA, and I, for whatever reason, I kept coming back. I kept coming because I get something out of these AA meetings. When I was new, I'll tell you, new people, I'm not one of these guys. You'll hear these guys in pit. Listen up. You go to enough meetings, you'll hear these guys that say things like, I drank for 40 years. 5 gallons of whiskey every day for 40 years. I didn't work. I didn't sleep. I didn't eat. Just drank 5 gallons every day for 40 years. And after 40 years, I walked into my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and the obsession to drink and use was lifted. You ever hear of these guys? I remember thinking, what? So what are you still doing here? I didn't get it. That wasn't my story. I got sober the old-fashioned way. It was agonizing. I was chain smoking, and I didn't even smoke before I stopped drinking. I'm chain smoking, sitting on my hands, white knuckling it, watching the clock, waiting for the AA meeting, doing what those old guys in AA said. Wake up in the morning, get on your knees, ask God to keep you sober that day. And go to the AA meeting at 8 p.m. And I did it. And they said, you know, when you're done at the end of the night, if you stayed sober, get on your knees again and thank God. It was a magic formula. I did it. And it was agonizing and painful. But guess what? It got easier. I got a little experience day after day doing that. It got a little easier. And today I'm free. It took a few years, but I'm free. And how do you put a price tag on that? And my sponsor saved my life. This guy pulled me out of scrapes. Listen, I turned 18 years old sober. And I couldn't go to college. My mother had zero money, and you probably guessed it, I'm a D-minus student when I cheat. So, you know, college was not an option. I can't even read directions to the meeting. I've been to a zillion meetings. I've spoken, I'm always early. I scanned it. I said, okay, St. John's, 1500 West Branch. Okay, nothing to it. I'm driving around the hardware store for 10 minutes. Anyway, couldn't go to college. I couldn't go to the military turning 18. A lot of guys were going to the military. I couldn't go on a technicality. I'm a coward. That wasn't going to happen. But guess what? I got some kind of courage. Looking back, I must have gotten some kind of courage, because I've been arrested 11 times, and I could show you on a map. All 11 arrests were in the same 4 square blocks of where I grew up. I never went anywhere. Cops knew me. You know, parents knew me. Judges, teachers, principals. Anyway, I got some kind of courage. My sponsor got me a job. First of all, he got me a job. How do you thank a guy for doing this for you? Got me a job. I worked at Sears. I made $2.30 an hour. And then he did the most miraculous thing at all. Got me into another school. Didn't do well. And then he got me a driver's license. People in AA know people. He knew somebody in the state. Some AA member got me a driver's license I wasn't supposed to get till I was 21. I got a driver's license. I saved $600. And I thought, maybe if I don't drink and I don't use, maybe AA's got my back. I want to tell you new people, you can't tell. You don't know this yet. But if you're trying this AA thing, you don't want to drink. You want to try not drinking one day at a time. Try opening that old book and reading those steps. You want to try doing what these other people are doing. You don't know it yet. But all around this town, this state, this country, and all around the world, people are rooting for you, man. They're rooting for you. They got your back. They want you to get some of this magic, this power to stay sober. And so the good news is there's help here, new people. That's the good news. There's help here. The bad news, it's us. We're the help. I thought, maybe if I don't drink, they probably got AA in California. And I came to California in 1978 with $600. I ended up over there. I knew my friend had a sister whose ex-boyfriend had a cousin whose mother-in-law had a place in Santa Cruz, the hippie liberal lesbian capital of the world, Santa Cruz, California. There I was. I fit right in, Lee. It did not go well, but I went to AA every day up there in Santa Cruz, and Then I ended up down in L.A. and I ended up over at Ohio Street. You guys ever heard of Ohio Street? A little pocket of enthusiasm. I was there in 1979 and met all the, listened to all the Chuck C's and the Clancy's and the Bobby Earls and the Norm Alpies and all these legendary AAs. And I found other brothers and sisters on this path. You know, I don't have time tonight. You've been studying the book all week. You've been talking about God. I'm not going to do that tonight. It's important, essential items, the book, the literature, the steps, and God. I'm going to talk about what made an impact in my life. My experience has been I can read the book till I'm blue in the face. Fantastic. Best book I ever read. And helps me to this day. But a book alone is not enough for me. God alone is not enough for this alcoholic. If I don't surround myself with other brothers and sisters on this path, I got nothing. I'm a fellowship guy. Bill Wilson said the fellowship, that's where the release from care, boredom, and worry. You know, your whole life will mean something at last. Thus we find the fellowship. So I tap into my brothers and sisters. I found other dudes. You go to Ohio Street, back then there were 250 people there 5 nights a week, and 40 of us were like under 30. If you go there tonight, Saturday night, there's 250 people, none of them are 30. They're all teenagers and in their 20s. It's a little pocket of enthusiasm, and I found roommates, and we met up, and we became roommates, sleeping on people's couches, and we'd meet up and go to the, hello, just like you folks are doing here in these three counties, three cities, five cities. I know this town, five cities. And you're meeting up, you're meeting your friends. Hey, I'm going here Monday, Tuesday. Monday night I went to Kelton. Tuesday night, 2+2. Wednesday night, I snuck in the Pacific group. I never had a jacket, but I went. Pacific group. Thursday night, Young People's Gong Show. Friday night, ladies and gentlemen, Rodeo Drive, Beverly Hills. That's right. That's right. That's where I went, big dumb loser like me, going to Beverly Hills on a Friday. Saturday night, back at Ohio Street. And then we would go to a sober dance. We had sober dances back in the day. Has anybody here in the five cities ever been to a sober dance? We see some hands. Okay, so you can tell the others. It's a whole new bottom that you hit in sobriety. Oh, yeah. You find yourself in some church basement on a Saturday night, dancing to the oldies with a bunch of sober white people. Man, it's a level of lame I never knew existed. But I was at all of them. And that's where I honed my moves. I was 5 years sober. I got a few minutes left. I was 5 years sober. Don't quit before the miracle, people. Don't quit. Those old AA guys knew what they were talking about. I was 5 years sober, 1983, 5.5 years sober. I had never had $1,000 in my life. Failed at every job. I had no skills. I worked at Sears in Santa Monica, stocking shelves, and tried a bunch of other things. And never had $1,000. I was living in the absolute armpit of the planet. It was the worst then. I don't think it's too great now. Probably not bad, but it was horrible. I was on Sunset and La Brea, Formosa at Fountain, the heart of Hollywood, and it was grotesque. There were sex workers at the end of my street, action up and down the street. I'm living in an efficiency apartment, $250 a month, and I couldn't pay the rent. I'm a block away from Boys Town, and it was an awful place, but it's all I could afford, and I couldn't afford it. Couldn't pay the rent, and but I'm an AA guy. I had two new guys on my floor. AA guys, newcomers. Because that's how we do it in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was an AA guy. I had commitments. I'm a literature guy, and I'm a cleanup guy, and I'm a greeter, and I'm a literature guy. And I had two new guys on the floor. Fact is, I was on the floor too, but I was in the bedroom because it was my place. And and those guys told me about a sales job. Those old guys told me about a sales job. And my wife just got to meet this dude. One of those two is still sober days, 42 years sober, guy that was on my floor. They told me about a sales job out in the valley, North Hollywood. They said, Jimmy, there's an AA guy that does the hiring for this big sales company. It's straight commission. They're selling tools. I said, selling tools? I can't even screw in a light bulb. They said, straight commission, straight commission. I got to pay the rent. They said, no. They said, Jimmy, they'll train you. The guy will hire. There's like 120 salesmen. About 10 of them are in AA. They'll probably give you the job. It's $200 a week for the first 2 weeks of training. I said, I got a pencil. I said, $400? They said, yeah. I said, dudes, I said, I can't sell. I know I can't sell tools. I can't even fix. I told these guys, I says, man, listen, I don't roll this way. But I told them my plan was I was going to put on a dress and walk down to Santa Monica Boulevard. Hey, don't judge. I don't roll that way. That's not my thing. But $20 is $20. Right? If you ever heard Lee's story, apparently he did that for years. Told me I didn't even need a dress. Anyway. They hired me. This AA guy says, you got 5 years? I said, yeah. He goes, you got 5 years? I said, yeah. Guess what, people? There had been salesmen there. There was 120 guys. Some of them had been there 20 years. Way back in the day, I outsold them all. I found something I was good at. A big dumb loser like me, I outsold all these guys. I was salesman of the year my first year, rookie of the year, a big trophy I love to brag about. I never got a sports trophy, a big salesman of the year trophy. And I had a technique. If anybody's in that industry or business at all, I had a technique. I wore people out. Sort of like I'm doing here tonight in Arroyo Grande. You know, we're heading out in troves. Yeah. 5 years sober, I never had $1,000 in my life living in the ghetto. 6.5 years sober at that company, I left that. I bought a house in Studio City, California. I hung around with other AA guys and salesman guys, and I gravitated towards it. I quit that company. The guy says to me, Alan Schmidt says to me, the owner of the company, he says, Jimmy, don't quit. I says, man, I started my own company. It's called Rock Bottom Imports. I sold rock and roll stickers and pins and posters wholesale. I hired all my AA buddies. We did trade shows. I had 1,000 stores that bought product from us wholesale. But the boss at the tool company says, Jimmy, don't quit. We're opening retail stores. We're going nationwide. If you stay, you can be a manager. You can train the other salesmen. And, I'll give you profit sharing. I says, nah, I'm not an employee type. I wanted to sell stickers. And that tool company became Harbor Freight. And you can Google, Alan Schmidt is passed, but his son, Eric Schmidt, is worth $15 billion. $15 billion. And I wanted to sell stickers. I got no time. I might as well just race through it. I'll just tell you. I had a little company and 5 years sober, never had $1,000. About 10 years after that, I bought a house out at Zuma Beach. I've been there 30-something years, and I'm on the bluff, a little starter house, nothing fancy, across from the beach, up on a little bluff, and I can see Billionaire's Beach, Broad Beach. I see up the coast of Broad Beach, and right in front on my view is a big square house that belongs to Eric Schmidt. I got to look at that guy's house every day. So you wonder why I'm doing 5 to 8 meetings a week, because I need treatment. Listen, I love AA. I get something out of these meetings I just don't have on my own. I don't have it. This is where I get to reminded of who I really am. I get reminded who I am at these AA meetings, who I really am. I get reminded of this plan for living. I get reminded of how much these little one-hour sessions have helped me. This is a magical winning formula. I'm going to read you about power. I got about 2 minutes left. I'm going to read you my favorite topic. I like to talk about two things. Some people like to talk about lots of different things. I like to talk about the fellowship, and I like to talk about power. I want to thank Rick for the cheaters. I left mine in the car. Not that I need them, but I can't see. I like to talk about power. You know that AA big book? Anybody ever read that big book? Big blue book? That big blue beer coaster? Anybody ever read that book? In that book, the word powerless is in it one time. One time they put the word powerless in there. They put the word power in there 147 times. Power, power. This is not a, for me, it's not a program of powerlessness. This is a program of power. And I think I might be right because it's in the book. Let me read it to you. The end of the book, one of the stories is called Me, an Alcoholic. The guy's going all over the world trying to figure out how to stop drinking. Doctor, what are we going to do? I got to live without alcohol. I can't stop drinking on my own. The doctor says, there's nothing I can do, and there's nothing medicine can do. However, I've heard of an organization called Alcoholics Anonymous has had some success with people like you. They make no guarantees, and they're not always successful. But if you want to, you're free to try them. It might work. Many times in the intervening years, I've thanked God for that man, a man that had the courage to admit failure, a man who had the humility to confess all the hard-won learning of his profession could not turn up an answer. I looked up an AA meeting and I went there alone. Here I found an ingredient that had been lacking in any other effort I had made to save myself. Here was power. Here was power to live to the end of any given day, power to have the courage to face the next day, power to have friends, power to help people, power to be sane, power to stay sober. That was 7 years ago and many AA meetings ago, and I haven't had a drink during those 7 years. Moreover, I am deeply convinced that so long as I continue to strive in my bumbling way towards the principles I first encountered in the earlier chapters of this book, this remarkable power will continue to flow through me. What is this power? With my AA friends, all I can say is it's a power greater than myself. You folks, plus me, is a power greater than just me. And guess what, new people? Look at all of us, 150 of us staying sober. All of us plus you is a power greater than just you. There's power here. There's power to stay sober. The book, if you read the step says, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol. That's pre-AA. That's pre-tapping into this power. It's reporting on the past. We were powerless over alcohol. Once we tap into this power in these meetings with this plan and this fellowship, this collective wisdom at these little one-hour slices of humanity, it's the best show in town. Thanks for putting up with me, folks, and we'll see you next time. Thank you very much, Lee, for having me out here. What am I forgetting?
Let's give him another round of applause.